All right. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Erin, and we're the Cage Queens.
Are you on something right now?
And I did say that I had a story you were going to think was funny, because it's a very embarrassing story for me, so everybody loves that,
I love
right?
it. Yes.
So, as part of this job that I'm taking, I had to take a pre-employment drug test, and I took it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's back up. I received the paperwork for the test on Friday, and Friday after work, so the lab that was on the paperwork was closed at that point, and they were closed all weekend. So I was like, okay, so then I have to take it Monday. So I schedule an appointment. I take the test Monday. Tuesday morning, I get an email from the HR person who I had not heard from. I was told like 2 weeks prior that I was going to hear from this lady. And when I got the paperwork on Friday, I assumed that was me hearing from this lady. I was wrong. So Tuesday morning, I hear from this lady, and she's like, okay, so when you get the form, within 24 hours, you need to take the test at this other testing location that's not the one that was listed on the paper. And I was like, oh, fuck, I fucked up. So I call her immediately, and I was like, I got the form on Friday, and then I took the test on Monday, and now it's Tuesday. And she's like, oh. And I was like, fuck. She's like, well,
God damn it.
I didn't realize that the paperwork was going to get there so early, and so I think you're just going to have to test again. And I was like,
oh my God, of course. Oh my God.
I had to do this fuck up. But then also, like, the HR department should have their shit together and know when the forms arrive and know when
you
to
know
send
it's
the appropriate
the
things.
State. They're fucking useless.
I know. And, like, why did you send it on Tuesday and not Monday if you thought the form was going to arrive that week?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Like, what the fuck?
You dumb bitch.
For real. So I was like, cool, great, fucking whatever. And I panic for about two more days. And then Thursday, early afternoon, a new form arrives. I come home at like 3 p.m.-ish. And as I'm driving home, Drew texts me. And he's like, already causing problems and you haven't started yet. And I was like, motherfucker, Drew knows.
How did he hear about it?
Because the people who were in the panel are pretty much the only ones that know about me having the job because they can't officially announce it until after the drug test has been taken. And so they must have had some sort of little private meeting where they talked a lot of smack about me.
And specifically about the drug test.
On the drug test.
Oh my God.
So in his text, because I was like, LOL, don't blame me, blame HR. Not entirely my fucking fault. And then he's like, yeah, well, your boss is hoping that you can take the test today. And I'm like, oh my God, it's 3 p.m. The lab they want me to go to now closes at 4:30. So I need to get there before 4:30 to take the test. And I had to be at my other job at 5 p.m. also that same day.
Holy shit.
But I pulled through. I managed to take another test, and now I'm in a long waiting period because it's a holiday weekend, and I don't know if the state gets Monday off in Michigan, too. Yeah.
Yep, they do.
So I won't hear anything till Tuesday, but
my God. The anxiety built up to take that first drug test.
Yep.
Go through all of that, and then have to take a second one.
Yep.
Like, I feel like that's completely HR's fault. I feel like you didn't fuck up there. Like, I feel like that was their mistake, and they should have owned it and just said, like, you're good. Like,
I would have already been, even with them sending that email Tuesday, if I had waited to take the test, if I had not taken it Monday, I would have been in violation of their policy anyways.
Exactly. So, like, they should have had, like, when they sent it out, they should have had, like, a tracking on it to see when the fuck it would arrive. Like, mm-hmm. if you're going to have such strict deadlines, like, you yep. got to keep check of your shit.
And
like,
send the email when you send the form, so that way people know to expect the fucking form and know
exactly,
the procedure.
Exactly, because some people, especially people that live in, like, you know, apartments or with shared mailboxes, like, they don't check their mail every day. Mm-hmm. So, it just seems like... dumb HR fucked up. And I just also, I love how Drew texts you that saying, your boss hopes that you take it today, but that was never communicated to you. So if Drew never texts you that, like, you would have been like unknowingly disappointing them. Like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was the story I had for you this week about how I had to do it twice.
God.
A test so nice, I had to do it twice. And
yes, your favorite thing.
I know.
Drug test. Oh, yeah. My God. Everybody loves it. God damn. Well, that's, you know, if the drug test you did, if you can clear it twice, like, you're good, man.
I know. And so,
oh, my God.
The extra annoying thing to me is that, like, just... for the purpose of, like, argument, I guess. On the form that they sent me the first time, it said Quest Diagnostics, which is a pretty well-known, common, widely distributed company. So I went to the only Quest Diagnostics in town, we only have one here, and took the test, which was wrong, because that was not where they wanted me to go. But where they wanted me to go was another place called Concentra, also another big, widely known one. And on the form, it says, for Concentra, to send the samples to Quest Diagnostics for analysis. So why couldn't I just take the test at Quest? I'm assuming it's some sort of contract deal situation, but, like, they're already paying for it. Like, they're paying for my first one, so, like, why is that no good?
God, welcome to the state of Michigan.
I know.
It was already bullshit.
I was telling my coworkers, because they were, like, asking me questions about, you know, the move and whatever with the state of Nebraska. I was talking to those coworkers. And I was just expressing my frustration with how it's been several weeks now, and I still, like, I'm glad and I'm lucky that I get to live with my grandma because I have no proof of employment. At this
point.
You know what I mean? Like, there's no way I could find a place without proof of employment. And I'm moving there in a week. So, like, you know, the frustration there. And one of my coworkers, she's like, is the HR, like, worse than the state of Nebraska? And I was like, honestly, yes. Like, I have not had this much of a horrible experience with HR in my life.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's just so shitty. But hopefully it's just HR. That's what has been my experience. Like, it's always been HR or, you know, just the admin that's been the problem. It's never been my, like, direct management or anything like that. So hopefully that's the only, like, shitty shit you have to experience.
Yeah.
And that working with the people that you work with on a regular basis will be much better. But God damn, I'd like to say I'm surprised, but I'm not.
So, yeah.
Oh God. It's not even inconceivable to me.
Damn it.
I love forced segues.
I know. Let's get into it. So the movie that we watched this week was Inconceivable. It was released in 2017, and the premise of the movie is about two mothers that get to know each other, kind of seemingly, like, by coincidence, and one of them starts to, like, really integrate herself into the other's life, and things kind of just get increasingly more, I don't know, suspicious with her behavior and how she's acting, and, you know, it has a dark twist. And Nick plays the husband of the, I guess, mother that has been targeted by the other mother. So, yeah, it's like Lifetime movie to a motherfucking T. Like, yeah. Everything about it.
Yeah, the only difference is we get to see titties and they drop the F-bomb a couple times. Like, that's truly it.
Exactly. I know. I was not expecting the titties. I was like, whoa. Hello. Yeah, because, you know, for whatever reason, Lifetime movies are always, like, G-rated, PG. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like, this movie's rated R. They air them on television. Anybody could be watching them. But, yeah, this one's definitely R material.
Yes.
So, the movie pretty much opens... in a dark house, we hear a baby crying, and then there's this woman in a terrible brown wig, obviously wig. She comes rushing out of her room, kind of distressed, and she goes to the crying baby. She's clearly panicked. She grabs the baby, says something along the lines of, like, Daddy's going to be home soon and we have to leave, and she calls herself, like, the baby's mom. And she's leaving the house with, trying to leave the house with the baby when Daddy walks through the door and chases her into the kitchen and starts choking her. And then she stabs him in the gut and he dies. Then we get the title flash, Inconceivable, which is kind of apt for this entire movie. But now we see Nick doing a jog because he's a very athletic guy who likes to show off his physique.
It was, like, scene per scene for, like, the runner. He's just, like, jogging in his sweatpants and then just lets out a big sigh. Like, so dumb.
He enters a mansion, like, a small mansion, but a mansion nonetheless, and goes up to his bedroom where we see his wife for the first time, played by Gina Gershon, who has been in so many things, a lot of things I've obviously never seen, but apparently she was also in Face Off.
I don't remember that.
I didn't either. I saw it in her credits, and then I had to, like, go back and figure out who she was. She was apparently, like, former lovers with Nick's caster Troy, I guess.
Oh.
Yeah. I think she shoots somebody. I don't really remember all of the details of that movie all that well. So, she was in it. And she plays Angela, or Angie. She is an older mother, and she is snuggling their single child in the bed. The kid's name is Cora, just for us to all know. She's, like, 4 years old, so it hasn't been a long time that they've had this kid. But later that morning, we learn that both Nick and Angela are doctors. They, I think, work maybe at the same hospital. And Angela alludes to being on some sort of, like, leave from work, and she misses work. So that's a very important little tidbit to this story. And then Nick takes his motorcycle to work.
In his leather jacket, nonetheless.
That's probably one that he's kept from, like, the last movie that he did.
God, he repurposes this leather jacket a lot. I'm looking at the, like, the DVD cover art, and he's also in his leather jacket in this. So yeah, Dr. Cool drives off to work. And Angie is a part of this kind of, like, mommy and me, like, athletic daycare system. And she goes to that with Cora. And then she meets another woman, which is the woman that we saw in the first scene. But now she has blonde hair and blue eyes. And she's introduced as Katie. And the kind of, like, teacher of this, like, daycare, her name is Linda, and she kind of, like, is like, I wanted you two to meet. I think you'd be great friends. And so they all kind of, like, they bond really well, and they're like, okay. And so do, because Katie's daughter is now grown up a little bit in a similar age as Cora. And so their kids get along really well, and so they're like, oh, let's meet up again for another play date. And they have it at Angie's mansion. Mm-hmm. And so they're all, like, getting along really well, drinking wine on the couch, just talking about life. And then they just, like, fall asleep. And then Nick walks in. He's like, oh, late night. And he's questioning, like, who this, who Katie is, because he's never seen her before. And then, Angie and Nick go up to bed, and then Katie opens her eyes, and they're just, like, this piercing, unrealistic blue mm-hmm. color that it's just, it's such a, you know, normally when we see piercing blue eyes, they're Nick's. So I was taken aback.
The actress that plays Katie is, her name's Nikki Whalen, and we've actually seen her in two other movies with Nick, which I didn't realize right away, oh my God. I was like, God, she looks familiar. And so I just went through the, her credits, and then I saw it later in the trivia, so I can't contribute this, but I did notice it. So she played the sex worker that choked or gagged on Nick's dick in Dog Eat Dog. And she also played the flight attendant who was having an affair with Nick in Left Behind.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So she's always been Nick's
side piece.
Oh, man.
It's unbelievable.
The next morning, after their little, like, impromptu slumber party, Nick and Angela are awoken by a noise from the kitchen that sounds like a kid screaming, but they're having fun, so they're, like, innocent, like, child loud noises. And Katie's down there cooking the girls' breakfast. So they all finally kind of formally meet each other, and everything seems, like, A-okay and good. And then it must maybe the same day, maybe the next day, who knows, but they're at the Mommy and Me place, and Katie's painting kids' faces, like, with, you know, cute little butterflies and whatever. Like, it looks really artistic, and we learned that she actually loves to do art. She makes a living by painting interiors, but she loves to do, like, big murals for people. It's just kind of her thing. And Linda sees this, and she's like, oh yeah, let's do a photo op moment. And so she tries to get a picture of, like, Angela and Cora and Katie, but Katie's like, oh, you know, I don't like my picture being taken. And so she kind of throws her hand up as the photo is being taken, and if you didn't notice, Linda was completely covering up the camera with her finger. Like, there's no fucking way. Like, it was so bad. Linda was not a great actor.
Oh my God. She was so bad, but she was such a babe in the movie. Like, you could tell, like, she really was, like, real, because her whole persona she was playing was, like, she was some sort of, like, athletic trainer mm-hmm. in the past, and you're like, yeah, I can tell that's probably your, like, real life thing.
But yeah, so that kind of really is, I don't know, like, their friendship quickly accelerates. So they have, like, a Memorial Day dinner at Nick and Angela's house, and Katie and her daughter are there. Linda's there. Nick's mom, played by the famous Faye Dunaway, who I've never seen any of her shit, but I know her name. She's a sassy-ass grandma. And then there's Barry, who I couldn't really tell how he, like, fit into the equation. He just also works at the hospital, so, like, I guess maybe mm-hmm. just a longtime friend. So they're all having a nice dinner, and apparently Katie can cook, and we learn that she's spent a lot of time in restaurants, but, you know, like, it's not a super important scene by any means. Like, who actually has a big old Memorial Day dinner like that? But the girls hang out, like, real late. Linda, Katie, and Angela, they're just up again real late talking. The kids had by this time been long asleep, and Linda's like, all right, well, I'm gonna peace out. So I guess party's over. And Katie's like, oh, you know, we should go too. And Angela's like, no, just stay in the guest house. Don't wake the girls. It's not worth it. You know, we'll just have fun in the morning. And Katie's like, all right, you know, I guess that's totally fine. And she helps Angela kind of start cleaning up their night. And Nick and Angela are, like, doing dishes in the kitchen. And Nick tells Angela that his mom does not like Katie. She doesn't like the vibes that she's getting from Katie. There's just something that she doesn't trust there. And Angela's like, I don't know. Your mom hates everybody, so it's not that much of a surprise. And Katie happens to overhear this from the doorway. And she, I don't know if she purposely dropped all that stuff to draw attention to herself, but she drops a stack of, like, coloring books and shit and is clearly rattled by something. So Angela and Katie go out to the pool, sit on their nice lounging equipment, and have a real heart-to-heart. Katie talks about being in an abusive relationship and kind of being on the run because of that, essentially. So that's what we are led to believe by, you know, how kind of startled and flaky she is. And Angela, like, opens up about herself as well in order to, like, kind of have a bonding moment, I guess. And she tells Katie that she kind of waited too long to have kids and then went through 4 miscarriages before they got an egg donor. And she was able to successfully carry one of those eggs to term, which was Cora. But the pregnancy was really, really hard on her body, and she started self-medicating to deal with the pain. Linda had helped her through all this. That's how they bonded. Linda was her, like, trainer before, and so this is kind of how they became friends, because she helped her through the pregnancy. And then about a year after Cora was born, Angela had to check herself into the hospital because she was addicted to her painkillers or whatever medication she was taking at the time. And so, like, she took a leave of absence after that from work. So it's probably been, like, 3 years since she's worked. And, it's kind of, like, her big reveal. And then even bigger reveal, she tells Katie that she's pregnant again, but she hasn't told Nick yet.
Yeah, so they really, get into knowing each other's, like, deepest, trauma really quickly. And so they bond really hardcore after that. There's another day we kind of flash to seeing Angie at the, mommy and me thing. And all of a sudden she just kind of, like, collapses and turns out she's having a miscarriage. Yep. And so she's really torn up by that, and she's having a hard time recovering. And this movie, like, it does jump time, like, quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And so later on we see just kind of, like, Katie and Angie and Nick all together just, like, strolling through the park. And Angie's talking about how she's getting ready to move. Or not Angie. Katie's talking about how she's getting ready to move away, and she found another job, and she has to just, like, leave. And Angie's kind of, like, torn up by that, and she's like, no, you should stay, because she's been such a, I guess, emotional support through this process. And she's like, I want to go back to work, and you can be our nanny and just stay in the guest house. And she kind of, like, convinces Katie to stay, and Angie's like, a little hesitant about that. Mm-hmm. She plays off like she's hesitant, but
right.
We find out later, it's all part of the plan.
they also commission a mural from Katie, which is very, if you're watching it, very key moment for putting the pieces together.
Yes. Yeah, she has this mural, like, she says that's her passion of, like, painting murals, but they all look the same.
that's the clue. Like, they all look the same. That's how you know.
Yep, it's a tree. So she works as the mural, painting the mural, and then also as a part-time nanny. And then they, they have another big family party, which I think is for, like, the 4th of July or some shit.
Yeah.
And the mom is trying to, like, Nick's mom has always been hesitant towards Katie. And so she's, like, asking a about her, like, past and where she's from. Katie says she's from Michigan.
I was,
like,
I know, but that was probably a lie because she didn't seem to know shit about Michigan.
And then she, like, just really gets into more trauma that she's had, how she's kind of grew up into foster care and how she's been job hopping and all this kind of stuff. And it just kind of feeds into Nick's mom's, like, hesitation about her. But nobody else seems to notice any kind of red flags. The first kind of red flag that... I don't know. I guess before we get to the red flag, there's a scene where it's late at night. Like, Nick can't sleep. He's trying to fuck Angie, but Angie's not in the mood.
She's not ready yet. She's still, like, still healing from the miscarriage.
Obviously. Yeah, still. And Nick's just, like, got his blue balls and he goes out on the porch. And then we all of a sudden see Katie, who is, like, acting like she's, like, nobody's watching, but we probably... kind of think, like, she's doing it on purpose to try to start seducing Nick, where she just, like, goes and makes herself very comfortable in their pool and then just goes in, like, kind of, like, almost skinny dipping. She doesn't have a top on and she's wearing underwear. And, yeah, she just dives in and Nick tries to look away, but he's, he kind of wants to watch.
He's definitely, he definitely takes a moment to look, but he doesn't act on anything.
Yes.
Unless he does it later off camera, we don't know. But
she can't help it. Just ignore her.
Katie preps the wall for the mural, and Angela's about to go back to work. It's going to be her first day back, and she's kind of having a hard time leaving. But Katie assures her that she'll keep Cora so busy that she won't even know she's gone. And Angela doesn't exactly like that particular phrasing, but she's like, whatever, you know, okay. And while she's away at work, Katie definitely takes the time to kind of, like, go through Angela's closet and kind of, like, check out her clothes, look at all the photos, and just kind of, you know, really, like, take the place and get a lot of information from what she can find without the owners being home. But Angela gets out of work early that day, and she comes home and she kind of calls out for Nick and can't find him anywhere in the house. The house is, like, totally empty. No kids there, no Katie there. And she goes out to the backyard and she can hear some loud music coming from the guest house. So she kind of heads towards the guest house. She's, you know, still looking for Nick. And she sees Katie, like, on top of somebody, but you can't see who it is, who she's, you know, having sex with, and she sees that Angela sees her, but Angie kind of turns around and kind of goes quickly back to the house, and she totally believes that Katie is fucking Nick, because that's just, you know, where her mind's at the time. And Grandma comes back with the kids, and then Angela gets a call from Katie to come out and, like, talk. So they have another moment out by the pool, and Katie basically is like, oh, yeah, I was not fucking Nick, I was fucking a woman. Like, are you surprised? And Angela's just relieved that it's not Nick, and she tries to ask, you know, like, well, who was it? Is it somebody I know? And Katie was like, oh, you know, just somebody from work, not important, you know, it's whatever. So, we don't know who she was seeing, and we have to believe it wasn't Nick. And they're, you know, like, totally cool again. It's no big deal. Later, I think it was that night, Angela finally sleeps with Nick so his blue balls can go away. But
yeah, and then shortly after, we see Katie meeting up with her lover, and we find out it's Linda. I was not expecting that for whatever reason. I feel like they were probably setting up. I was like, oh, shit. Okay. And so, yeah, Linda and her have a moment. And then Linda's like, oh, I'm not supposed to tell you this. And they're at a beach. And she's like, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but, you know, Angie and Nick are trying to have another kid and they want to go through a surrogate. And Katie at first thinks, like, oh, they're gonna ask me, and then Linda's like, no, they're gonna ask me, like,
you idiot, dumbass.
like come on now, they barely know you. But So Linda's like, oh yeah, I'm just going to go for a quick 3-mile swim.
Yeah.
Which, that's not quick. Like, you know how long it is to swim 3 miles? So Katie must have been waiting on that beach for like at least 3 hours.
Yeah.
And so then this next scene is so like dramatic.
Yes.
Where Katie goes in the water and she's just standing in her underwear, and then Linda's like getting ready to come out of the water and she's just like, what are you doing? And then Katie kind of just like goes and starts revealing her truth about how she was the egg donor for Angie, and how she believes that, you know, the kid is hers and she's gonna like claim what's rightfully hers. Mm-hmm. And then she grabs the weight that she's holding underwater and hits Linda over the head and then holds her under and drowns her.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was another. So then we know that Katie is obviously
unhinged.
She's got some. Yeah, she's obviously unhinged and you know, she's becoming a serial killer at this point with 2 deaths under her belt that we know of so far.
That we know of, correct. Yeah. Oh, my God. She also alludes to she also kind of tells Linda that this egg that they're going to, you know, have for surrogacy is from the same donor, which would be her, so it would be her baby. And then also Maddie, her kid, is her own from one of her other eggs. But she didn't carry that particular kid. So, like, how did she get Maddie, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Linda's like, you need help. And then, yeah, that we know the rest. Her body was discovered by a couple walking on the beach. And no good. But then we cut to Katie lounging in the pool, and she's getting her bronze on, and she gets out of the pool, and we can see that she's definitely pregnant at this point. She became the surrogate by process of elimination.
Yep.
Grandma is hanging out there, too, talking to Angie, and she voices her concerns, again, about Katie being the surrogate. And she's like, and you know that she was totally fucking Linda. Like, you know that, right? Like, it was so obvious at the 4th of July party. And Angela is like, what? She was fucking Linda? Like, what? Like, it was news to her, and she doesn't totally believe it. Apparently Grandma can... I don't know. She's just very in tune with
Grandma has a sixth sense or something. Yeah. She's picking up on all the context clues.
Hey, Mom. Still kicking ass?
But the pregnant Katie takes the kids to that Mommy and Me play place. And there's another mother there who kind of strikes up a conversation with her, you know, asking her, like, how far along she is. And Cora and Maddie are playing together on the swing, and she asks how old the girls are, and Katie's like, oh, well, they're both about to turn 4, and so this lady assumes that they're twins. She also assumes that Katie's their biological mother, and Katie kind of goes along with it. She's like, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, they're definitely twins or whatever, and they definitely look like me. We get that all the time, and Angie walks into the scene, and Cora runs to her, calling her mommy, and the lady's like, oh, I don't want to talk to you anymore, and she kind of walks away, because it definitely made things pretty awkward.
Yeah, and, like, when the lady asked her how far along she was 4 months, but she had a fucking watermelon stomach. Like, she looked like she was, like, at least 8 months. Like, she was so far along. And ever since she had that belly, like, it stayed the same, like, throughout.
Yeah, it really did.
I'm like, oh my God. And so then we go to the doctor, and they are getting, like, a chromosome test. And Katie's like, I don't know, she's just upset that she has to get the test. And she's starting to really make it known that she's becoming, like, possessive over the baby, where she's using, like, the words, like, my baby. And Angie's, like, starting to to pick up on it. And she's like, oh, like, that's kind of weird, but whatever. She's just anxious. And then she goes in to get the test. And then Katie has a flashback for where we see her, and her name was Tara mm-hmm. in the past. And we see that she used to be an egg donor, but the doctor back then told her, like, oh, these are, like, the last viable eggs you'll ever produce.
Three eggs.
And so, it was three eggs, so she knows she has three children out there somewhere. And so, she was kind of in that middle of that flashback, and then she just kind of had an outburst in real time, and, everybody noticed it. And Angie's like, you know what? She's super stressed out. Let's get a prescription for her to calm her nerves. And so she gets the prescription, which, you know, she formerly used to have a problem with. So, yeah. Sets her up.
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate. At this point in the movie, the mural that Katie has been working on is pretty much done. It is a giant tree in a field with a blue sky and a bunch of animals. The kids, the girls, they believe they're sisters because Katie's been telling them that behind Angie's back. And then Katie clarifies, she's like, no, I said you guys are like sisters, not actual sisters. And so, you know, good cover-up, I guess, whatever. And Angela goes to the guest house at one point to drop off some clean laundry and sees Katie and her daughter Maddie, like, dyeing their hair, like, bleaching their hair in the kitchen area of the guest house. And Angela's like, ooh, I probably shouldn't be seeing this. And so she goes back to the house. And then later that night at dinner, Katie kind of addresses that, and she's like, oh, you know, we went a little too dark or lighter. I don't remember what she said. And then they talk about how they've been dyeing their hair since they've been on the run. So, you know, it's probably okay for them to, like, go back to natural now, but they're just so used to it. I guess, sure, whatever. And then Katie brings up the maternity leave question, and this is where things start to get real tense for everybody, because Angela's like, well, so we're actually, after the baby's born, we're going to hire a night nurse and then find somebody more permanent, you know, after that. And basically saying, like, once the baby's born, we don't want you here in our lives anymore. Like, we don't want you staying here and helping out. And Katie's not super happy about that. She's like, well, you know, like, I can stay here and take care of the kid, you know, like, I don't have to go anywhere. And they kind of fight about that briefly, and Katie storms off to go give the girls a bath. And then Nick and Angie have a fight at the table, because Nick's like, I thought you had the shit sorted out, and then he basically leaves. So, real good communication all around.
Yeah, and then after Nick, so Nick kind of, like, in that argument, he kind of sides with Katie and is like, well, she's got a point. And then, you know, Angie's so upset. She looks at the drugs that she, you know, got Katie. But then she resists and she chucks them in the trash.
But Katie sees that.
Yeah. Yeah. So she knows. She knows she's got some potential ammo to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get another flashback of Tara, who is, apparently her thing, as it's been alluded to, is that she finds the mothers that she's donated to, like, her eggs to. She judges their parenting skills because they're never up to par, and then she kills them. And so the way that she got Maddie was this woman, she's, like, in the bath, and there's, like, a baby crying, and then, like, Katie gets into the house and she's just like, oh, that's the kind of mother you're going to be? Just enjoying yourself drinking while your kid's crying? And yeah, so she kills her.
Yeah. She was painting a mural for them. It was, can you guess, a tree. It was a tree.
Big surprise. So we get the backstory on how she got Maddie.
Yeah, we basically get the story before she stabbed the dad in the guts. Like, it was that yes. whole interaction. We just got to see more of it to put all of the pieces together.
Yes, exactly.
I'm actually glad she gives a shit.
But then we kind of flash forward to real time, and then Angie, she's like, she pretty much Katie, like, accuses her of being, like, a drug addict, and Angie's like, I'm not a druggie, like, I threw everything away, like, mm-hmm. that's in my past, and then Katie just becomes, like, a real bitch, and she's oh, yeah. just like, leave me alone.
Yeah, she calls her pathetic, too, like,
yeah.
She was real shitty. But one day while Katie is off at an appointment, Angela takes that opportunity to start snooping in the guest house. First, she's not really finding anything, but then she sees these three books on the mantelpiece. Two of them are like, pregnancy books. There's also a baby name book. Like, why would you have a baby name book if you weren't planning to keep the baby? But she starts flipping through the What to Expect When You're Expecting book. And it's got tons of tabs in it and a bunch of sticky notes that are definitely very affectionate towards the baby, like, can't wait to hold you when you're born kind of shit. Like, really stuff that you wouldn't have in a book like that if you weren't planning to keep the child. So Angela's getting suspicious, but she hears Katie coming home. So she quickly throws the books back up on the mantelpiece and slips out the back just in time. And then she does some heavy Googling because she found a picture of, like, the front door and number address of a house that was in a picture, like, somewhere in the books, I think, or wherever she was snooping in the guest house. So she does some heavy Googling there and, like, falls asleep in the chair. And Nick is just like, huh, what you doing? Why are you here? And she's like, oh, you know, I'm just doing research for a patient. And, of course, all her search history is still there. So Nick knows that she was not doing that exactly. But that morning, Katie happens to notice that the books on her mantelpiece are slightly off. I don't know exactly what it was. Maybe they weren't just stacked up there as neat as she had it before, but there was something that tipped her off that somebody had come in and gone through her shit.
Yeah. And so Nick, they kind of like start to have a little bit of tiff in the kitchen, and Nick's there this time, and he's just like, and they kind of like, she's like, I feel, Angie addresses to Katie, like, oh, I feel like you're hiding something. Mm-hmm. And Nick's like, like, we are hiding something. And so then they go upstairs, and turns out they were completely, have, like, this baby room ready. And Katie painted a mural that had the name Gabriel on it. And Angie's like, what the fuck? You decided on a name without me? You're having conversations with her? And so, like, you know, this surprise gift just went terribly wrong, and it kind of causes Angie to spiral and, like, really question what's going on. And she pretty much says, you know, they kind of continue their beef, and, you know, Katie's just like, oh, she's acting this way because she's on drugs and she's using again.
Yeah.
And then she kind of, like, paints the picture as if Angie's the one that's the problem. And then Angie's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, I know you killed Linda. And then the grandma's there, and she's like, yeah, you called it. Like, you knew that that she was weird and, you know, that things were going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's really, everybody's assuming that Angie's acting this way
right.
because she's on drugs, which we know she's not.
And then Katie has, like, pain in the baby region, I think mostly just to, like, cut the arguing, to, like, take that, you know, to diffuse that situation, or to, like, to stop the argument, because, yeah, Angela's definitely like, did you kill Linda? and it got to that point, and then Katie's like, oh god, my belly's in pain, and then they take her to the hospital because the baby might be, I don't know, hurting from the stress of the situation. But they get to the hospital, Katie's just fucking fine, so she was probably faking it. But back at home, Nick and Angela start arguing again about what had just happened before. And Nick's like, we can't lose this baby. Like, we have a legal contract agreements with Katie about, you know, like, if we do anything to endanger the baby, then she has grounds to keep him. And they don't obviously want that contract to be broken. So Nick is like, I need you to take a urine test to prove that you're not on pills. And then also you need to apologize to Katie and make this right. So the next morning, Angela goes to like wake the girls up or whatever. I don't know. And Katie is in bed with both of the kids sleeping. And so Angela's like, well, I'll just see myself out. And then she goes down to the guest house once again and tries to break in there, but all the doors are locked. So she is able to get one of the windows open. And in the process, she cuts her hand pretty good and leaves some blood evidence. And she goes back into the space. And she grabs that Mommy and Me book. Or, fuck, it's not a Mommy and Me book. The What to Expect When You're Expecting book. She opens that up, starts flipping through it, but all those sticky notes that were in there that were very affectionate towards the baby, they're all gone. So she's like, okay, like, something's up here. And obviously, like, Katie knows that she's been snooping, and so she is a little confused and kind of, you know, now more evidence is piling up. She also has a very bloody hand. So she goes into the bathroom and rinses that cutout and notices the contacts that are on the counter there, and they are blue-tinted contacts. So, dun-dun-dun, obviously somebody's really disguising themselves.
Prove it. I want a urine sample.
Yeah, so then Angie and Katie, they kind of like, they make up, but they both are like, it's like a pretend makeup. Yes, like, they're both on high alert. Yeah. Like, they both are trying to get at each other's throats, just like, you know, unknowingly to one another. And so pretty much what happens next is, so eventually, like, Nick and Katie, for whatever reason, go to, you know, turn in Angie's urine sample. Mm-hmm. And Angie's at home, and she has a suspicion that Katie is a donor. And the place, so she calls the place that she got her eggs from, which is strictly supposed to be anonymous, and, you know, she's trying to beg for details. The person doesn't give it to her, but we see on the home page that it's the, I don't know, the owner, or, you know, whoever, yeah, it, like the president of the company, who also happened to be the woman that was killed.
she was a different woman, so that was, actually. So, yeah, sorry. Like, they were different women.
Are you sure?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to tell, but I'm pretty sure they were different, because she died 4 years prior, called a suicide, but also, I'm not like she looked different than the woman who was in the tub, though.
They did look different. They did look different. But I think maybe that was intentional to show, like, this was an older video, or I don't know. It was just too coincidental that the person from the egg agency was also, like,
she was dead.
Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it happened 4 years ago, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, regardless, they wouldn't tell her, you know, who the donor was, but on the homepage, they saw this mural. And so Angie's like, can you tell me who painted the mural? And they're like, we can't, because she's a donor. So she got the confirmation she needed to confirm that, you know, Katie's the donor.
And she shook.
Yeah, she's like, oh my God, like, this crazy person found her way into my life. But she has to, like, try to play it cool in front of everybody else. And so when the next morning when, you know, she's getting ready to go to work, she's like, okay, I need hardcore evidence that, like, Katie is Cora's actual biological mom. And so, like, she goes downstairs for breakfast and makes sure she's, like, grabbing, you know, cups that have their DNA on them so that she can have Barry take a sample for her. And at the same time, Katie's like prepping the juice and then puts drugs in the juice that Angie's gonna drink. And yeah. So they're both, you know, secretly getting at each other.
Yeah, and at this point, Katie also knows that Angela broke into her guest house a second time because Angela left the fucking window open. Like, come on, Angie. Like, if you're going to do the snooping, at least try to cover up your tracks.
For real. Angie, you're a doctor. You should, like, know these things. You should know about DNA evidence and, like, about meticulous, you know, practices. I don't know.
Yeah, you would just think she'd be smarter about it. But... Nick is taking the day off to take the girls to the zoo, and Angela...
What a good dad.
Angela brings the cups to Barry, and while she's sitting there waiting for Barry to finish up, like, his previous interaction, she chugs that bottle of juice with the pills in it.
Darcy.
Yeah, it's like carrot juice or something, so it cannot be all that great, but she chugs the shit out of it. And then, as she's leaving the hospital to go into her car, you can tell she's, like, stumbling a little bit, kind of feeling out of it. She gets in her car. She drives a little bit. She almost passes out while she's driving. And so she pulls over, and she basically passes out on her steering wheel for, like, an hour and a half, according to the clock on the dash. And then she wakes up, and she goes to take another drink of her juice. And she's like, wait a minute, this is what drugged me. So she doesn't. And she has a real moment. She's like, oh, fuck, like, this is really bad. Like, I've definitely been drugged by Katie. I need to go home and confront her about it. So she somehow drives the rest of the way home. There's no way that she's not totally, like, still feeling the effects of those pills because it looked like a lot. But, she gets home, opens the door, and surprise, it's a baby shower that Katie put together. Everybody's there. And Angela makes a huge scene, like yelling about how Katie just tried to kill her. And, you know, like she's going to try to take the baby. And pretty quick, the baby shower's canceled. Everybody leaves. Angela goes and, like, throws up on the floor and ends up in the kitchen kind of to clean herself up. Katie's like, oh, I'm going to go talk to her. I'm going to go make this right. And Nick is pissed as shit. So Katie goes into the kitchen, and Angela quickly defends herself, basically, with a kitchen knife. She's like, don't fucking come close to me. And Katie kind of confesses everything to her and is like, you are kind of a shitty mom, you know, I'm not going to let you have this baby, and yada yada. But she basically thrusts the knife into her own belly, like Katie does, and then kind of screams out for Nick. And then she also, like, slams her body into the fridge, bashes her own head on the counter, and really, like, makes it look like Angie's trying to kill her. And Angie's standing there like, don't stop, please, like, stop fucking doing this. I'm not, like, trying to hurt you. And Katie turns that knife on Angie and stabs her in the gut. And it doesn't look so good for Angie. She's not looking good. The ambulance takes them probably separately to the hospital, and Barry meets Nick in the waiting room. He's got the DNA results, and it's not good for them. The DNA shows that Katie is a match to Cora, and so Nick he's like, oh, fuck, what have we done? And another doctor comes out shaking his head, you know, like, I'm sorry, Nick. And Nick starts crying.
Yeah. So we're led to believe that, you know, Angie didn't make it. Mm-hmm. Nick goes into Katie's hospital room and tells Katie that Angie doesn't survive. And Katie's, like, kind of relieved. And then she's also, like, throwing herself at Nick, saying, like, pretty much saying, like, you know, love me. You're my husband now. Like, we have a baby together. Like, and Nick is kind of just, like, you know, he can tell that he's just, like, I don't know, grieving or something.
He's
He doesn't really react emotionally towards it. He kind of just, like, brushes it off. And then, so Katie has to go under a emergency C-section to get the baby out so it doesn't suffer from, you know, the injuries sustained. And so Katie does that. And then when she wakes up, Nick is there and he's like, hey, let's go see the baby. And he like takes her to the, what's the word?
It's like a NICU.
For the baby or whatever. Room.
Well, yeah. This baby had to be. The baby had to be under observation because apparently there were complications during the C-section, yeah. But baby's okay. So
yes, and so Nick wheels in Katie, and they're looking at the baby through the through the glass, and then Nick like whispers in her like, "Take a good look, cause it's your last." And she's like, "What?" Like not really understanding. And then Nick goes into the room and he holds the baby. And lo and behold, guess who walks into the room? Angie.
Y'all.
At that point, we're like, oh, this is another little twist. Yep. So, you know, Angie survived. And then she goes into the room with Nick and they're holding their baby. And Katie just goes hysterical.
Yeah. Yeah. Katie had tried to get into the room, but it was locked. So, like, she couldn't get in. She's freaking out. She's pounding on the window. And then she gets arrested right there on the spot. And we see Katie, like, kind of, or Tara, whatever you want to call her at this point. She is in, like, a padded cell, basically, just sitting there alone. And Nick is taking another jog. Got a jog to close out the movie, too. So,
just like the runner.
Yep. He jogs on home, and when he gets up to the bedroom, Angie's there with both the girls, both Maddie and Cora, and then the baby is in a little crib at the foot of the bed. And now they're one big happy family, apparently. Yeah. They just get Maddie, I guess. I don't know how that works, but
yeah. I don't know either. But it's the movie's finally over at that point. Thank God.
It was we powered so through long. It was,
another one.
Yeah, it was a big one.
Yeah, and a lot of it was so predictable.
Yeah,
just as Lifetime movies are. So
right, but there's just so many like little details and nuances that mm-hmm. clue you into how it's all going to shake out. That it's a lot, but
yeah, and there was not really any good trivia. No. Like the only trivia that was shared was just like, oh yeah, some of these actresses have been in movies with Nick before.
Yep.
So nothing terribly interesting there.
I don't care what you say, but you have to make this right.
Oh, man, you know what? I'm not at all prepared for. I forgot to open my tabs.
The ranking.
I know. I gotta get there.
I don't even know. The only movie that I'm thinking about comparing this to is The Runner.
That's only because of Nick's running.
Except it has nothing to do with the context of the movie. Like, I don't know if we've watched something similar like this before, Nick.
I don't think we really have. This is yeah. God, I have no idea where to...
Yeah, new...
I don't know.
New genre.
Yeah.
I don't know where to put it either. The Runner ranked pretty low. I don't think it's that low on the list. So The Runner is 78
Holy
out of 81.
Shit.
I don't think it's that
low.
Yeah,
it's not that low.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. I would watch this over, like, any of the animated movies, really. Because, like, at least, you know, we are suckers for Lifetime movies. Because, like, just the incredibly stupid drama that is involved.
Bad acting,
just like,
bad wigs. It's...
Yes.
The twists are
It's juicy. There's something about it that... Yeah.
Like, one of my favorite things to do with my mom and my stepdad is watch a Lifetime movie, you know, when it's airing on TV and trying to figure out who the bad guy is or who the killer is or whatever.
Exactly.
Like, all the twists and shit. So much fun.
It is so much fun. So... I don't know. I feel like
I'm down here by Trespass.
I don't even know where that is. What number is that?
64.
Okay. Is it better than Girding Tess?
Getting Buried Alive.
I know, because the end was just so unexpected and so good. But everything else about that movie was just so flat.
Yeah, true. So it actually might have been better than Guarding Tess. Stolen was...
Can't remember that.
It was Nick's teenage daughter that he was estranged from because he was, I think, in prison. Mm. Was kidnapped by his, like, ex-business partner, who became disfigured by his own doing. Yeah. And then he had to find them. Oh, yeah, the guy drove around in a taxi for a long time with her in his trunk.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either. This one's hard. Because I'm, like, you know, it wasn't a good movie by any means, but...
Right.
The twists and things were fun to watch, so...
Right.
Yeah.
I guess if we're so... I don't know, because it's like... It's not like Nick's part was anything of value in this movie.
He didn't
like,
do anything bad. He didn't have any... Like,
exactly.
Except for his... At the end, when he was like, fuck you!
Yeah, he was the one to make that bold-ass move, which I loved. But, like, and Drive... Angry. Was that the one where he was the devil?
He was like, he like came from hell.
Sent from hell.
He stole stuff from the devil or something. I don't know.
I liked his character better in that movie I did in this movie.
That movie was also
It could
ridiculous.
Happen to you. Yeah, it was. It could happen to you.
Okay, wait. What if we put it between Drive Angry and It Could Happen to You? Because It Could Happen to You was definitely, like, a very saccharine movie, you know, it's very, like, corny and whatever. So, I think...
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's a good spot for it, actually.
Perfect. Okay, so that would make it number 57 out of 82.
All right. You're going to have to give me a second to pull up the next movie, because I was not prepared. I thought I was, and then I forgot about this.
Where is this coming from? I thought you guys worked it out.
Our next movie is called Mom and Dad, which came out in 2017, rated R. It's an hour and 26 minutes. It's considered a comedy horror thriller. The one sentence we get here on IMDb says... A teenage girl and her younger brother must survive a wild 24 hours during which a mass hysteria of unknown origin causes parents to turn violently on their own kids.
So this one I have started watching in the past, but I never got through it because I was like, oh, I wasn't really impressed.
I know I watched this whole movie, but I... Mm-hmm. Could not tell you very much about any of it, except that Nick is in it, and I think it's Selma Blair. I was like, Selma somebody, but yes. Yeah, that's all I could tell you about.
Yeah, so do remember the premise, do remember, I don't know, I think hopefully, you know, watching it again will... Have some different opinions. We'll see if, you know, getting a fresh take on it.
Yeah, Nick's already making after some seeing faces some of his... on that poster.
Yeah. Yeah. All I remember is, like, these parents go into, like, kind of this catatonic state, and they just, like, try to kill their kids. Yeah. And so, it's kind of like, you know, we do love horrors.
True.
True. So, hopefully, you know, we get to see that, that edgy side of Nick that we don't get to see too often because he doesn't really make horror movies. But yeah, I guess we'll know in a matter of weeks.
Yeah. And we might be recording in the same location for that one.
Oh my God. Can't wait. Yeah. We've only recorded in person once together.
Oh, it was so awkward. Yeah.
Right? It's like, it's such a different experience. So, yeah. We'll do the best we can.
Do you believe her?
Check us out on Patreon and become a Nick Sack for $1. You'll have access to our bonus episodes covering other Nick media. We have 5 bonus episodes out now, including Nick's Saturday Night Live appearances, The History of Swear Words, our review of The Haunting of Nicolas Cage, a novella, and Dark by Paul Schrader. We are also taking requests, so become a Nick Sack for $1 and let us know what you want to hear. You can also follow us on Instagram at Cage Queens Podcast, where we have a link to our up-to-date movie ranking. Again, that's Cage Queens Podcast on Instagram and Patreon. Thanks for listening.
Just stop, okay?
But yeah, this movie was inconceivably bad.
Thank you.